Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Debbie Rowley.
And you are listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, that twice weekly podcast for people who stab ground cloth repeatedly. Debbie Rowley filling in for Christine. Thanks, Debbie.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure always.
Always fun to talk to you. And coming up now, I'm going to spoil it right here. Coming up after the first of the year will be our 100th show with the guest. And so you'll get to hear Debbie again, because Debbie was our guest on our first show. So Debbie coming back for the 100th show, and then kind enough to fill in this week for Christine. So it's all Debbie Rowley all the time.
Yeah, see, I was going to talk to you about that, because you and Christine talk about me quite a bit. And
it happens, yeah.
Well, it's gratifying. It's also somewhat embarrassing.
It happens, yeah. 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 I think last week or the week before, it was like, okay, this is like a promotional show for Debbie, but that's okay.
Yeah. Well, okay, great.
Yeah. Well, for me, you know, I mean, when I'm in the middle of one of your projects, you know, it's just kind of all encompassing and all.
About.
Yeah. So, yeah. And that's, Mary Corbett has her Stitchers Christmas thing going on. And I have not entered yet, but this week she has some threads that I would like to have a chance to win. What you have to do is you have to talk about your current project. So It's going to be Glitz and Glamour Opal. Yeah.
Yeah. See, I'm going to enter that too. Is that unfair? But I was looking at those threads and thinking, oh my goodness, I want those threads. I want those threads really badly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then I have to go to the website where they're offered and look at them there and think, oh, do I need to place an order? Do you need to see if I'm going to win the ones from Mary's site? What do I need to do? Decisions. Early Christmas present for me.
Yep. Now, it's just a few days. I think you wait and then you order.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I can do that. Yeah. I can wait and I can order.
Hang in there, Miss Instant Gratification. You can do it.
Well, see, and I've collected all these different threads that, you know, I go to a shop and I see these threads. Oh, pretty, shiny. Ooh. Mm-hmm. And I have to have them, and I have to have a bunch of different colors of them. And then they're in my house and I forget that I have them, because what do I use the most when I stitch? I use DMC. Uh-huh. I use Awesome Pearl Cotton and Krynek. That's what I use the most, with a smattering of Rainbow Gallery. And, you know, I have to really think about, how am I going to use these threads? You know, is it that I just want them because I want them because they're pretty and shiny and I have no idea what I might do with them? Or do I buy them with an eye toward maybe eventually I could do a project with these? You know, I don't know. It's a dilemma.
Yeah. And I can see in your mind, as a designer, you can't just buy a blue and a white.
Oh, no.
No, you're, I can see you. Yeah. But I got to have 8 shades of blue and, uh-huh. Yeah, because you never know.
Well, yeah, because if I'm going to start stitching with them and I want just exactly the right shade, I need to have it to hand instead of having to wait for it to come in. And, you know, it's better to order a whole bunch and save on the shipping cost than to order some now and some later and some later and some later. I mean, so, yeah, it's more practical to get a bunch. Tell myself that.
You've really rationalized this out. That's excellent.
I have.
Yeah, you spewed that very nicely. Well played.
Well, there you go. I mean, I've got in all the threads that I have, you know, we're going to be moving sometime
Uh-oh.
Next year. And
Uh-oh.
So I'm thinking about, well, and here's the sad part. I'm leaving a very well-stocked local needlework shop that – she has all kinds of stuff. She has a fabulous selection of county canvas designs and everything you need to stitch them. I'm moving to a little town of about 15,000 that has no needlework shop, that has no A&G chapter, has no EGA chapter.
This is big.
Yeah.
This is big. And nothing within a reasonable driving distance?
About 2 hours.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Oh.
So ordering everything I might potentially need for a project at one time is going to be really important. because, you know, I can't just run to the local shop.
Going to have to build an addition to the house with a studio and a small retail store, Debbie.
Well, see, I'm going to have a nice studio.
Oh, are you? Oh, good. Good.
Yeah. This is a really, I won't get into all of the details about the house. We're moving in with to an existing house to help take care of my mother-in-law. 7,000 square feet. We're finishing out 5,000 square feet of it. So the loft over the living room is where I'm going to have my studio, and it is 12 feet by 50 feet.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, all of that will be studio because Rod's going to have his office up there as well, so we can work side by side. And but anyway, yeah, I'll have a big studio.
Wow. So his 10 feet, so you'll have 12 by 40.
Have 10 feet. He's not going to have 10 feet.
Oh, eight.
Not even eight. He might have three.
Oh. Ooh, 12 by 47. Okay.
Well, you know, and part of it, we're going to put a bathroom up there, and part of it's going to have a guest bed, but it's going to be a fairly substantial area where I can work and have all of my threads and my computer and all of that stuff.
Well, that'll be fantastic. Well, that's kind of, to have that space to lay things out, especially when you're designing, has got to be really important.
Well, it's more important when I'm kitting things.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Because, you know, I do classes through Shining Needle Society. And one class I did, I had 94 students.
Wow.
Well, that's cutting a lot of canvas, and that is just an obscene number of DMC boxes, and there were three colorways and multiple threads for each colorway. And to have room to lay everything out would be a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
I don't need very much space for designing, just me and my computer. But, you know, for kitting and cutting canvas and binding the edges of the canvas and putting kits together and all that kind of stuff, it's going to be really nice.
Just be a little factory.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Wow. Is that when you order massive amounts of DMC like that, do you just get that directly from them?
Oh, I wish I could.
Oh, it doesn't work that way, huh?
No, DMC does not sell directly. They sell to distributors, and you must get it from a distributor.
Oh.
And so this sets up a problem for me because I use a lot of satin floss. And most distributors might have a box or two of a single color of satin floss, and I need six of the same color.
Mm-hmm.
So I run into issues with especially satin floss because I use a lot of it, and I need the same, you know, 40 skeins of the same color, and distributors usually don't have that much.
Right. So that forces, that just piles right on this having to work so incredibly far ahead with these designs.
Yeah. Yeah. I need to, I could order what I needed like a couple of weeks in advance of when I needed it. And now it's pushed out to 8 weeks.
Oh my.
So, and it's not every supplier, but, you know, there's quite a, I just can't run the risk of something being back ordered and not having it in time for a class. And
right.
So it's not unusual for me to go through three or four different distributors to get everything I need and pay the shipping cost.
Right. Yeah. That shipping cost, cause that gets to be a factor after a while. Once or twice is one thing, but, adds up.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I just, because like you were, you know, we've talked and you've already done designs for seminar, A&G seminar for next year because you had to submit those to get a teaching slot. And then I assume you really have to start working on the year after.
Yeah.
To keep that churn going.
Yeah.
And then if you're going to do any classes, then it gets down to that old thing where if you're going to make your hobby into a business, the business starts to suck up more and more of the time just to keep things going. And
well, and you really have to approach it like a business. You can't approach it like, oh, I'm just going to sit and stitch. You know, no, you have to approach it like a business with deadlines and supply issues and packaging and presentation and all of that stuff that's involved with
Yeah.
it. And I think a lot of people don't realize how much of a business it is.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's because, I think, because I always think about the little things. So, yeah, you got to have thread and canvas, but then you got to have something to put the thread and canvas in. And all those little things that come with it that help you send the finished product out the door.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like one of the things I'd love to find. I can't, and I don't know why I can't find them, is Ziploc bags that hold 8.5 by 11 sheets. I have no, where do I get those?
Order them from Uline.
Oh, of course.
Now you're going to get 600 of them, but
I never thought of Uline.
yeah.
Oh, because I've scoured Amazon, I've all over, and I can't find them.
No, Uline. And you can get just about any size bag that you want, because if you're wanting to put 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper in there, you're going to need 9 by 12 bags.
That's what it is, okay.
And another source is clear bags. Now, clear bags has zip top bags, but they also have those that have the adhesive flap.
Okay, yep, those,
And you can get them with a hang tab or without a hang tab. And before I started binding my charts, that's what I used was clear bags. And I used the bags with the flap and the adhesive, so that you could, if you were careful and opened the bag carefully, you could reuse it and put your stuff back in it. But that's another option.
Okay, because see, and it isn't because I'm going to become a designer and shipping out thousands of charts. What I want to do is I have a whole rack of magazines that I really don't want to store all those magazines, but in them are one or two charts, and I would like to cut them out and put them in their own container,
Well, that makes perfect sense.
and then just keep those just those pages so I have those charts. And but I'd like them to be in something, and I don't want to three hole punch them into a notebook. I'm just not never have been a fan of the three ring binder thing.
I'm not a fan of the binder either, or the page protectors. I know I do have some of my students in class that very carefully removed my double wire binding, which was specifically selected so that you could fold the pages back on itself and it would flat. But anyway, they very carefully removed that and then put all of the loose pages into page protectors in their three ring binder,
Oh, no, I would
which
never do that. No.
see. That my philosophy is all the time that I have to spend organizing, winding floss on bobbins, putting the stuff in a page protectors and a three ring binder is time not stitching.
Yes.
And I would rather be stitching.
Yep. Now, see, I would never do that. Of course, when I buy charts of any kind, I don't like taking them apart. But I did, I'll tell you, it hurt me. With this the Glitz and Glamour opal that I'm working on, that people are probably wondering if I'm ever going to finish it because I just keep talking about it,
Finish
almost to the center section, so almost halfway. So, but life keeps getting in my way. I can't help it.
it. Well, there's the holidays.
Counting on it,
Hello.
counting on it heavy. No, I every time I think I'm going to have a day where I can just get up in the morning, have some breakfast, and then, just basically sit in front of the TV and stitch all day. It never happens.
Yeah,
So,
me
yeah.
too.
And I know if I could get that day, I could motor right through that thing. But,
Oh, yeah,
yeah.
absolutely.
But it's just not happening. I'm counting on one of those days between Christmas and New Year's. I really am. But, what was I going to say now? See?
Oh, we were talking about organizing and putting. Oh, you were taking glitz opal apart.
Okay, so I got now this hurt. So you have that all nicely bound up, and then you have the master chart
Yes.
that is folded.
Right.
Okay, and I find I end up using that more than I do the instruction pages because, I mean, it's a Jessica, it's this,
You
it's
were to
that.
go.
And so, but I kept having to, because you've got different shaped Jessicas in there. I kept having to flip back to the instructions to make sure I was getting started right.
Right.
And then okay, I got it. And then I'd go back to the master chart to place the next one. And finally, I just, in a moment of frustration of flipping back and forth, I just tore out that master chart. It hurt.
No. It's perfectly fine. And I tell my students in class, tear it out if you want to, so you can, you know, use a magnet and put it on your canvas so you can refer to it.
Yeah, well, that's what I did. First time I've ever dismantled a chart, but
yeah.
I had
and
to.
And then, you know, when you're through with it, just fold it up and shove it back in the book.
Yep, well, I had to. That hurt.
And then you can put it in one of those plastic bags you're about to get.
Yes, all 600 of them. I'm buying some. I've got a stack of books I want to cut up. And because you know how much room magazines take up, and
oh my gosh, yes,
yeah, and I shouldn't complain about magazines; how I make a living, but still, I just want those charts out of there.
One thing that you want out of the whole magazine, why would you spend all of the space,
right?
And you know, finding something to store all of the magazines in, when I imagine you can probably take out the projects that you're wanting to keep and keep them all in. You know, one of those banker box things.
Oh, easily. Yeah. But I want them in sleeves, and I don't want them in page protectors, because magazine pages, by the time you get them in a page protector, you might as well just wad them up.
Right.
So I want them in something that they'll stay pristine. So, all right, U-line or clear bags. Okay.
Or clear bags. Now, U-line, you'll have to buy, you know, a gazillion of them. Clear bags, you can buy 25.
Oh, that's where I'm headed then.
Or 75 or 100. And the more you buy, the cheaper they are.
Yeah. Because I think that's what I would need, is like 100.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I doubt if you could find a box of just 100 at Uline, because they do sell in mass quantities.
Yeah. Okay. That solves the problem. Because see, the other part of that is that I've got several Hands Across the Sea sampler books.
Right.
And Nicholas ships those in those plastic bags with the sticky strip on them.
Yep.
Well, you can take those apart and use them a few times, but eventually something gets crinkled up or something. And
right.
So I would like, and I'd like to protect those. So I'd like those in a nice Ziploc bag too. So
yeah.
Okay. Problem solved. Thank you.
Okay.
I've looked high and low. I mean, I've literally looked high and low for that, but you know, and U-line's just across the border in Wisconsin for me. It's like, why didn't I think of that?
Well, yeah.
Well, all right. There we have it. I'll be ordering. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Got it. Okay. So I had to ask you in the Opal experience. I tend to stitch fairly tight. I know people who stitch tighter than I do, but I give threads on needle point canvas. I give threads a pretty good tug. I don't like them. You know, I don't like them at all loose.
Right.
And so. When I all you know the 1,000 Jessicas in the Opal thing, I was doing a set. There's a set of three on each corner with the Dinky Dyes Pearl,
right.
And I was pulling them tight because those Jessicas have to be tight, I think.
Right.
And I got around to the other side, and the tension apparently had accumulated and had collapsed the canvas just the slightest bit, so that when I was going under for the final few stitches going under, my initial stitches were a little looser than I like. And I think it was because I was pulling, you know, it just the tension accumulated as I went around the circle. And so now I'm with the next one, I'm not being so tight with it all the way around. I guess I'm going to firm, from tight to firm.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd not experienced that or noticed it, but it was one of those things where, oh man, now these threads are not as tight as I'd like them. And so I didn't know. So I wanted to ask you, have you experienced that, and or how tight, and I know it's hard without showing.
Right.
Do you tug those pretty tight when you do Jessicas?
No, I don't. I prefer a stitch tension on my canvas that does not distort the edges of the canvas. And I've had students who've pulled things so tightly that they were having visible lines and holes in their canvas because they are stitching with such a tight tension. And so you want the thread to lay against the canvas very nicely, but without pulling so much that you're moving the canvas threads. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Now, and what I advise my students to do is when they're beginning a Jessica, to begin with an away knot or a pin stitch where it'll be hidden by the Jessica to come, because you need that first stitch to be very firm because you're sliding all of the other stitches under it.
Right.
That's going to loosen it. And so, you know, you want to start with a nice firm tension on
and see,
your...
Yeah, and see, that's what I do because I know that first one has got to anchor everything. Yes.
That it has to anchor everything. And then also what I do is if after I have completed stitching my Jessica, I take the tip of my needle and I kind of stroke the stitches until they're all laying the way I want them to.
Oh. Look at you. Okay. So that kind of takes evens things out then.
Right. So, if, you know, if anything got distorted or moved or, you know, fidgeted away from where I wanted it, I just take my needle, the tip of my needle, and I just stroke along each stitch to make it all very smooth and nice.
Okay. I have to try that then. All right. And I think I have to ease up on the bowel planes here. I think I might just be a little tight.
Yeah. You could be because, you know, look carefully at the edges of where you're stitching. If the canvas is not still exactly as it comes, if it's distorted the least little bit, your stitches won't be as pretty. And you'll have, you know, you don't want it, the thread to lay too loosely on top. I mean, it's like making pie dough. It's a feel thing. Yeah. I can show you, I can give you my recipe, but until you've made 400 pie crusts, you don't know exactly how the dough is supposed to feel. And so, you know, I've done so many Jessicas, I don't even think about it. And I'm sure Curdy would say the same thing because, good grief, you think I've got a lot of Jessicas.
I was going to say, yeah, there's Curdy makes a Jessica getting out of bed.
Yeah, she does. And so, you know, it would be interesting to find out if she has any tips about stitching Jessicas so that they all look really nice. But, you know, that is what I would suggest is, you know, make sure that you're initial tension is your first stitch is very firm, but not distorting the edges of the canvas. And also, I find it, you know, I like to stitch with my canvas extremely tight. I use EverTights and I ratchet that thing down because I want my canvas to be really tight. Mm-hmm. But it can be really difficult to slide your needle between the canvas and the previous stitches if your canvas is too tight.
Okay.
And so you have to work at it harder. And so it might be helpful to loosen the canvas just a little bit if you're finding it difficult to get between the previous stitches and the canvas.
Okay. That's good to know. Cause, and I have EverTights coming for this project because I have them on just a conventional a set. And I have EverTights coming because I just, with all the work on that canvas, it keeps loosening up. I've had to retighten it two or three times and it's like, okay, enough of this.
Yeah. I'm done.
Yeah, really.
If I can my canvas is time not spent stitching.
Yeah. And that's just it. Yeah. You know, and you pull all the tacks out, you know,
yes,
get it all lined up. So it's square. And it's like, if I can just take a wrench and crank on it, I'm going with that.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. So, okay. So that sounds like, cause see, that's where I see now where I'm getting myself in the spot, and it's not horrible. You know, I'm not embarrassed. I'm not going to tear those things out. They're fine, but they're just not quite right. And I think it's because I know that first stitch has to be firm. And right. I think as I go around, I'm probably, I know I'm adding to it because when I got back around to the other side, those were looser than I cared for. So yeah.
Okay, so the ones that you've already done that you're not going to take out because there's no need to take them out, try taking the tip of your needle and just kind of stroking them to see if that will help, you know, get the curve.
Yeah.
the same, the swirl, the same all the way around. This is something that I show in my video stitch demonstrations in my classes. I actually have video of me with the tip of my needle kind of stroking things into place. And, you know, all the students are going, I didn't know you could do that. Well, why not?
Well, I'm pleased with the way they look. I have the swirl I want and all that, but I just know underlying it's not quite right. I'll do that with the needle, and then I need to just ease up a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
I just don't want those things. You know, I just don't want them slipping, and I don't want.
I don't have any problem with mine slipping if I anchor my beginning stitch with a pin stitch or with an away knot. And you want your knot, you know, if you're starting on the lower left side of the Jessica, you want your away knot to be to the right.
Yes.
So that it's coming under the... You don't want it in, this is going to be really hard to explain without visually you'd get it. Oh, in about 3 seconds. But, if your away knot is, if you put your knot on the left side and then you bring your needle up on the lower left side, you're going to see the end of the thread where you bring your needle up.
Right.
But if you anchor on the right and bring it up on the lower left, then that is going to put equal pressure on the end of the stitch so that it will be under the canvas like you want and you won't see it through the hole.
Right. Because that's something that's one of my underlying skill development things is just that very thing is to make sure that I keep those holes open as much as possible. No matter what it is. So I don't have that thread dragging under the hole.
Well, good luck with that with the waffle stitch.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
I just, you know, every time I hear you say that, I'm thinking, well, what about a waffle stitch? Because,
Yeah, it doesn't happen.
It's not going to happen with a waffle stitch.
I appreciate that I can't get it 100%.
Right.
I mean, I've never, but I think, I think it's worth the effort anyway.
Yeah. And, you know, this is something that I instruct in my classes is how does your thread need to travel so that you have enough tension on each end of the stitch? And this is something that no one ever taught me because, you know, self-taught. I stitched probably for a good 10 years before I ever took a class.
Uh-huh.
And it's something that when it was demonstrated for me or when, you know, someone pointed it out, I was like, oh, well, that makes perfect sense. And now it's just an automatic thing, but it's something I make sure I tell my students because it's those little things that you pick up in class that you didn't even know you didn't know.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, and I think it makes a difference. Cumulatively, it makes a difference in the project if you do those little things.
Yes, it does make a difference.
And I'm not sure it's even a conscious difference, but I think it puts a better definition on all of the stitches and makes it ultimately worth the trouble.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I think that just paying a little bit of care, right, when you're first learning a better stitching technique, then it becomes automatic and you don't ever think about it again.
Right.
And it makes your stitching, you know, just incrementally a little bit better.
Yep. And applies to, you know, not just needlepoint, but applies to, you know, anything, even cross stitch on linen.
Yes.
I work pretty hard whenever I start a new section of color. I mentally sit there and map out where I'm going with it to try and keep those mm-hmm. stitches as clean as I can.
Yeah.
I just think it's worth the trouble. I really do.
Yeah, and I think that one of the most important things you can do is to always try to bring your needle up in an empty hole and down in the shared hole.
Yes.
I think that there's some terminology that I don't particularly care for, but, you know, some refer to it as coming up in a clean hole and down in a dirty hole. Well, we try very hard not to have any dirty anything on our needlework. So I prefer the term empty hole and shared hole.
Yeah, and I've had instances where I've been forced to come up in a shared hole, and it lifts the thread that's already there.
Yes, it does.
And it I it's frustrating, and then so then out comes the laying tool to try and keep that thread down.
Yes.
And then, you know, sometimes tear it out and find a different path because it's wrecking what's already been done.
Right. And, you know, with some threads, especially like neon rays or fireworks or things like that, it can be disastrous to come up in a shared hole.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, sometimes it's unavoidable, and so you just have to do the best that you can. But if you've paid attention to having good tension on each end of your stitch, you should be able to see a nice empty spot, even in a shared hole, where you can bring your needle up.
Right. Yeah, agreed on that. Yep. But still, worth it to avoid it. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So, okay, well, all right, I gotta ease up on the Jessica tension. when I get this sucker done, I am gonna know Jessica's. I've never found them intimidating, but now I'm just doing them blind, you know, and I've just done a few so far. But the only time I really pay attention now is when you have a different shape going. Then I got to make sure I get off on the right foot with that. But that's a fun challenge. I love it.
Good.
It's good. You were recently at your daughter's making what was that? How many cinnamon rolls was that?
1,728. It was 18 pans of 16 in each pan.
Unbelievable. Oh, the dough and the cinnamon alone. Jeez.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was interesting. And this was a fundraiser. My son-in-law is a youth pastor. And so 3 years ago, they started, you know, what can we do that would not cost a whole lot of money, but that we could make some money on to pay for youth summer camps and things like that for the church youth. And so they started making, Elizabeth said, well, let's try making cinnamon rolls. And so they made cinnamon rolls, and they made cinnamon rolls last year. And last year she had some challenges. And so she decided that she needed mom to come and help, because I know how to make cinnamon rolls. I've made cinnamon rolls. So she made the dough. I rolled it out. We had the youth putting on the butter and the brown sugar and the cinnamon and all, and I rolled it up, and then son-in-law cut it, and then we had the youth putting them in the pans, and I was basically in charge of making sure that the dough did not overproof and that it did not overbake. And so that was my job.
That's a bit of a process, because you got to roll them up and then you got to cut them, right?
Right.
And then do they have to rise?
Yes.
Okay. Wow. You earned
it. So it was good. They made some money so that they can take kids to camp, and I'm already on the schedule for next year. They have decided that they can't make them without me.
Being a mom never ends, does it?
No, it never ends. And it was fun. I enjoyed, you know, because I was working with my daughter and my son-in-law, who I love very much. And then on Saturday, when we were up there working, both of my grandkids were up there as well. And so I got to work with all of them.
Wow. Excellent. That's a good weekend there.
Yes.
Yeah. So, okay. So that was, yeah, I had to make sure that story got in, because I couldn't believe how many cinnamon rolls. It's just frightening. Absolutely frightening. Yeah. But you know, I travel quite a bit, so I'm always hauling needlework with me. And I wondered, when you travel, like for a weekend like that, do you take a project to,
yes.
And to what degree? I mean, do you throw a full stand in, or?
I, like for this particular weekend, I took the project that I'm currently working on. I took a lap stand because it's just easier to stitch. I get hand fatigue if I'm trying to hold on to stretcher bars. So it's just easier. So guess where it all stayed?
Got me.
In the car. I never took it out.
No. No.
I was with my grandkids and my daughter, and I was exhausted every night. We got home after the first night, and I was like, can we go to bed yet?
Oh
I
my.
was so tired.
Because see, that
Never.
was, and that's what I wondered is in the evening when you're sitting around talking, do you haul out the stitching? But clearly not. You went to bed.
I went to bed. Yeah, but this time I went to bed. You make 1700 cinnamon rolls, and I
No,
don't think you're gonna be wanting to stitch
no
either.
thanks. I'll pass.
But like when we go to my mother-in-law's, where we're working on the house, I always take my work with me. I take and I in fact I left my travel stand and clamp. I use a System 4, and I left my travel stand and a clamp at her house,
Yeah.
so I don't have to take the stand back and forth. And I do work there because, let's face it, I'm not going to be hanging drywall, so whatever.
Yeah. There are people for that.
There's other people doing that. And but I need to be in charge of my daily schedule. And so I can stitch while I'm away from home. I can design. I can write instructions. The only thing I can't do is print and mail.
Yeah. Yeah, 'cause it's just something that enters my mind is if you are at a gathering, you're visiting, it's evening, everybody's sitting around talking, is it rude to haul out the stitching while we're talking?
They're so used to seeing me stitch.
Yeah.
Everybody that my husband's side of the family, my side of the family, they're so used to seeing. I've been doing this for years.
So it's weird if you don't.
It's weird if I'm just
Okay.
sitting there. And it honestly, is it rude to be sitting there stitching, or is it ruder to be on your device?
Well, point there, yes.
And because, I've looked around at some gatherings I've been at. My husband and I went out to dinner last night, and while we were waiting to be called back to our table, Rod and I were talking to each other. Everybody else who was waiting, all of the couples, all of the families, every one of them were on some kind of device.
Oh, okay. So,
And
yeah.
so, I don't think that stitching, especially if you take the right kind of project, now don't take something where you're changing colors every two stitches and having to really focus in on what you're doing. But if you've got a border to stitch, or you've got a big area of a satin stitch pattern that you're like Hungarian stitch or something like that, that you don't really have to think about all that much, sure, why not stitch? I can still talk
Yeah.
to people while I'm stitching, more so than if I was head down in my devices.
Texting someone else outside the room, yes.
Playing a game or reading, surfing the web or whatever.
Yeah, that those devices, I'm not and I do it. I mean, I do it. And Mark and I will, like, if we go out to dinner, we'll talk, but then there are times when we're both looking at our phones, it's like, well, yeah, but then we're
Yeah.
together all day long anyway, so it's not
Well,
like
that's true.
it's not like we don't see each other.
Well, and it well, I won't get into that. It's because Rod works from home and I work from home, and so we're both here all day. But he's in his office working. We're not together in the same room working. And so we talk to each other quite a bit at lunch. We talk to each other quite a bit at dinner and all through the evening. And when we're going out to Elk City to work on the house or whatever, that's a 6.5 hour drive. We usually talk all the way out there, talk all the way back, and we always have something to say.
Yeah. Hey.
Tomorrow is our anniversary. We'll have been married 43 years.
Excellent.
Yes. And we like each other. We want to be with each other.
Yeah. Yep. Same here. Yeah, we just did 40 years in August, so yep. 43, so on it would be on just before Christmas. All right.
I was a Christmas leave bride. It was the first day after I got out of college that semester. I think I finished college on the 19th, and we got married on the 20th.
Oh man.
And because, he was in the Army, and so that was Christmas leave, and we could spend
Oh.
time together before I had to go back to school, and he had like a couple of weeks of leave before he had to report back.
So you jump on it. Go for it.
We had the wedding rehearsal and the wedding in the same day.
Oh, there you go. Now that's compacting the time. All right. Excellent.
Yeah, I'm just like, we don't need to waste any time here. Get on with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was the first time that all of our attendants could be there. You know, we had this very well planned. And my mother was like, I can't believe you're getting married at Christmas time. You don't know how busy we are. And on. And anyway.
Yeah.
I said, we don't need to make it a big deal. And I didn't even go shopping for my dress. My mother and my sister picked out my dress.
Okay. And 43 years later, you're still fine. So
we're still fine.
Yeah. Yeah, it worked out.
He was the one. I knew he was the one.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's terrific. Yeah. Wow, that's compacting the time in a hurry. Oof. Mm-hmm. Hurry up. We're going to get this over with. That's great.
Yeah. Get on with it.
Yeah. That's, you know, and that was something that's interesting. I was thinking this morning, as we get older and our kids grow up, how the Christmas changes, whether you're Christmas or whatever holiday is you celebrate this time of year, how that changes in that you have the family time, but then, people say, well, I'm really busy. And yeah, you are, but isn't it a lot of it is stuff you select?
Yeah.
And that makes it fun. And then there are those days, and oh, I'm counting on them, where nothing happens.
Right. Yeah. Well, this Christmas season, we're not decorating this year for Christmas because we're back and forth so much and none of the kids are going to be here. And so we just, okay, fine. We're not going to do that. But we have made it a point to go and do some things. Like we went to Hot Springs, Arkansas, to the Garvin Woodland Gardens, where they have this huge light exhibit that you walk through.
Mm-hmm.
And so we drove down and did that. And then last night in our little town where we live, they have this big lighted up Christmas tree and a Ferris wheel and carriage rides and stuff. And so we went and did that last night. And when I was in San Angelo, my daughter and granddaughter and I went to see the Nutcracker. And so, you know, we're doing things to celebrate the season. You don't have to decorate if you don't want to.
Right.
And
you're busy. You're busy, but it's a different busy.
Yeah, it's a different kind of busy.
Yeah.
I'm with people that I want to be with, doing things I want to do.
Yep. Yeah, it's interesting you say you didn't decorate because we greatly minimized decorating this year. Margaret got a 4-foot tree she put on a table in the living room and decorated it. And because we're either not home or it's just the two of us. And she really cut back. And we used to put lights on the house. Don't do that anymore. A neighbor two doors down used to do fairly elaborate, and we thought they were gone on vacation. And then all of a sudden, two poles appeared in the yard with those turning light things that make things reflect off your house.
Right.
And you know, they're home. Joe just quit doing all the decorating. he just said enough of this. So
I'm going to decorate next year. You know, we'll be in a new house and I'm going to decorate next year. I have needle-pointed ornaments that I absolutely love, and I treasure them because most of them I've gotten in ornament exchanges with my stitching groups.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, when I pull them out, put them on the tree, and I remember who stitched it and when I got it, and, you know, so it's really fun for me. And then I also have a collection of Holy Families, which is just Mary, Joseph, and the baby. And I've got about 30 of those, and so I'm looking forward to getting all of those out and arranged and everything. Mm-hmm. And I did the Marbeck Nativity, you know, that big 5-panel cross stitch thing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I've got that I'm looking forward to putting out.
Oh, boy.
So I'm looking forward to decorating next year. Oh, and I've got Christmas stockings. I think they're Better Homes and Gardens cross stitch, where each stocking is a room, like there's a kitchen and there's a room and there's a study and all that. So I have those for all of us.
Hmm. So you have the equipment. You just, next year is going to be the space and make the time to do it.
Yeah, next year I'm going to make the time to do it.
Yeah.
And my mother-in-law is looking forward to decorating next year. She, you know, there's a lot of windows in this house, and she wants to have a Christmas tree in every window, and I've already told her we're not doing that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, while it would be pretty and it would be fun, who's going to put them up and then who's going to take them down? Well, right. It's not going to be me. I don't have the time for it. But we'll do two trees. We'll have one in the living room and one in the kitchen. And she makes beautiful wreaths. I'm going to encourage her to make a wreath and put it in every window.
Yeah. Yeah. But not a tree.
But not a tree. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 1 year, 3 years ago, I think it was 2 years ago, we made it a point to find Christmas concerts at churches, and other things. And we set up a little schedule in December, and I don't know, it was a half a dozen. I think we got in, maybe not that many, but anyway, we just decided, hey, there's churches and other venues around here all putting on Christmas concerts. Let's take in some of those.
Sure.
And that was a lot of fun. You know, when you talk about going to see the Nutcracker, that was a lot of fun for us to go to because there's a small university right down the road from us with a brilliant music program. And we went to their thing and it was just a treat. And it's just, you know, all these churches that have music programs and you go and you enjoy some Christmas music and, you know, for an hour. And that was fun. That was a fun thing we did.
And you know, it's festive. It really puts you in the mood, and the only effort that you had to expend was to get in the car and go there.
Right. Oh yeah, that's just it. You don't have to buy $50 tickets ahead of time or anything. Yeah, just show up.
You just show up.
Yeah.
And then enjoy the beautiful music. And you know, as someone who has performed in choirs, and you know this yourself with your handbell choir, you really want somebody there to appreciate all the effort that you've put into it.
Yes, yes.
And it enhances it for the people who are performing.
Yep.
And so they appreciate you being there.
Yeah. No, we had our Christmas concert just this past Sunday and had a really good crowd. And, you know, you people who are performing go, oh, I hope nobody's here. I'm so nervous. No, you want as many people to come.
No, all the people there. Yeah.
Pack the place and share, because we're sharing. Yeah, we've been working since October, since September.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to share this, and we only have one shot. So, yeah.
Yeah, see, and, you know, to bring this back to stitching, a lot of us work on gifts and things like that we've stitched on a long time. We want the person who's receiving it to appreciate it.
Right, right.
Yep. Which is why I don't do stitched gifts anymore, so...
I was going to say, wait a minute.
I stitch ornaments that I give to the two main groups that I'm in, because whoever receives that ornament appreciates it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because my A&G group, you know, various people couldn't come to our Christmas thing. And so there were just two of us to exchange gifts, ornaments.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman, and so there was just two of us. So she got mine and I got hers. And
that's pretty simple.
What she had stitched was one of my ornaments.
Oh, no.
But like I told her, all of my stuff is models. It's on display everywhere and it's not on my tree. Uh-huh. So now I have one of my designs that I can put on my tree that I know that my friend stitched.
Yep. Yep. Excellent. Yeah. And your friend stitched it. Yeah.
Yeah, I was so glad to have it. And so, you know, it's just kind of weird.
Yeah. Well, that's quite an exchange there. Two people, two ornaments. Excellent.
Yeah.
That works.
Yeah, it works just fine.
Yep. All right, Debbie, I think we're going to call it here.
You know what? I don't think we talked about a single thing on your list.
Nope. Nope, we didn't. No, I'm going down the list now. No, we'll save it for another time.
Okay.
It'll all keep.
It'll keep.
So thanks for doing this. Okay, so holiday break coming up here. So this Wednesday, this one today, and then Sunday, Vana comes back. Talked to Vana all day long. So
she's fun.
Yeah. So that's Sunday, and then a break until the first Wednesday in January. So I'll put stuff up on Wednesday and Sundays during the holidays, but it'll either be repeats or I have an idea for a little video I might do, but a break. So if you don't see something on a Wednesday or Sunday, it's because I just didn't do it. But we'll be back on Wednesday. And then The first Sunday in January will be our 100th show with a guest, and so Debbie will be back, and with a whole different set of topics.
Yes, we talked about all kinds of stuff. I don't even remember what we talked about, but we talked about a lot of stuff.
I don't either. I don't know. But it's our 100th show, and Debbie was kind enough to provide a chart for an ornament that all the listeners who subscribe to us will be able to download. So that'll be a nice thing to celebrate 100 shows. So we appreciate that.
My pleasure.
All right, that's going to be it. If you do the Christmas thing, Merry Christmas. And otherwise, happy holidays. Thanks for listening all year. It's been good. Good year. Lots of people listening. And Debbie, thank you so much.
It was wonderful as always. I always enjoy talking to you.
Appreciate it. All right. We'll be back after the New Year. Thanks for listening.